Good evening, dear viewers. This is Desiree Rover from the Netherlands on the Minority of One report. And I have two guests tonight. In the first hour, that is Diana Spengola. And in the second hour, that will be Lorraine Murray again. Diana is a journalist and author, a radio host, and her website is www.spengola.com. And tonight we are going to speak about her latest book, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. Well, I'm very curious. Diana, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program.
Yeah, so I heard all sorts of things about this Sandy Hook stuff because there were YouTube films with parents that didn't cry and that seemed like crisis actors, that sort of thing. But your book is almost 600 pages and you gave it a very extensive bedding with which I agree. And the first thing I would like to speak about with you is what happened that 14th December in 2012 in Newtown, Connecticut. The first stories that we got was of a huge disaster by one guy, Adam Lanza. And then later on, all sorts of other stories came around that it was a hoax and it was this and that. And so you really researched it. Can you tell me what really happened?
Okay, this is what I think happened. Now, I had just finished my third book, and so I really did not have time to evaluate it, to look at it, because I was busy with this huge project. And then I thought, well, I'm going to invite some people onto my program to talk about Sandy Hook, because I really hadn't looked at it. And so I invited one person onto the program, and she said that I did not know the material well enough. So I thought, well, I will look at her material to evaluate it, to just get, you know, to become acquainted with it. And, of course, that's why you have guests on the program, is to get an introduction to their material. And so since she declined my invitation, I looked at her video, and I saw all kinds of anomalies. And you had mentioned also the idea of actors participating in what people were calling a hoax. And it was very interesting to me that the accusation that Robbie Parker was an actor was based on a 27-second portion of a press conference, an 18-minute press conference, which was immediately sent around as proof that he was an actor, when in fact it was just a small portion of a press conference, and it was within 24 hours, and apparently this 27-second video went viral. I believe it was probably a CNN video. It took place at his church. He had just come out of the building where apparently he had met with various members of his church. And so I thought, well, that is certainly something that is taken out of context. And in order to evaluate something like that, you don't take it out of context. You look at the entire thing. And if you look at the entire press conference, you see that he did express a lot of deep emotion, a lot of sadness, a lot of grief, a lot of typical parental response. And I thought back to the time that Russell Yates gave a press conference on his front lawn, it was the very same day that his wife had drowned their five children in the bathtub. And there were times when he didn't laugh or, you know, but he smiled. And he didn't act any different than Robbie Parker was acting. And certainly when people are experiencing grief, And even if you were to stand in a funeral procession and talk with somebody who had lost a parent or a child, they're not going to stand there and bawl. They're going to express all kinds of emotions.
Yeah.
And, so. Right. It's a natural kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I agree. And so going through this video, of this person who had declined my invitation to be on the program, I just thought, well, this doesn't seem to be, to me, to be a conclusive evidence of any hoax. It just seems to be a lot of circumstantial kinds of things that really didn't make any sense to me. And this was before the official records, the official report came out, and having been engaged in family history research for a number of years, I feel that I am a good researcher, and it has always been my practice and policy that you look at records that are created at the time of an event and that you don't rely on compiled records. Now, records that are created at the time of the event are called original source documents. Mm-hmm. And that is what people, that is what people should rely on, as opposed to compiled documents or compiled data, which is something that people create or make up or use. And they're usually records that are not sourced. And it is comparable to hearsay or rumor. And so.
Yeah, and they can edit it every which way.
Of course, and add whatever they wish or mm-hmm. it. So anyway, that is the kind of research that I do. And in order to oppose what a government has issued, you have to know what it has issued in order to do that. But the situation, you can compare it as a guest of mine yesterday on my radio program did, and as we did, in his book. It was a very fine book. And he talked about the four major sources of the records that came out about 40 to 45 years after the so-called Holocaust. And these were the records that were introduced, that were produced at the time. For instance, the death records that were seized by the Soviets from Auschwitz, which were called the death records. And there was also the Red Cross records. There was also the records kept by an archive. There were also records, the decrypts that the British had obtained through the decryption of the communication system of the Germans. And so those are the records that were concealed for at least 40 to 45 years. They came out in the late 1980s, yeah. Early 1991. And so people had 40 to 50 years to create Hollywood movies and to flood the school system with all kinds of mythology. It was time for the media as well as the allies to create all of this, all of these myths about, oh, Germany did this and Germany did that and Germany gassed 6 million Jews. And of course, people believed all of this stuff because, well, everybody saw the bodies, but nobody said, well, just exactly whose bodies are these? And you and I talked earlier about cognitive dissonance.
Yes. Yeah.
And which is something that a person that holds two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values at the same time, or is confronted by new information that conflicts with existing beliefs, ideas, or values. And so you have all of these people, I mean, probably 99.9% of the population that believed that that the Germans were guilty of this horrific crime against humanity of killing 6 million Jews, when in fact, 50 million people perished, were slaughtered during the Second World War. And of course, the 6 million myth was a big, huge distraction from what the Allies had done in bombing Germany to smithereens, as well as Japan. And so you have this myth of 6 million that died. And if you were to ask the average person about how many people died in World War II, they wouldn't know. They would only know that, oh my goodness, those filthy, dirty Nazis killed 6 million people. And so you have the same situation with Sandy Hook, only you had just a shorter period of time. But given that some unnamed entities, within a few short hours, within 24 hours, on the 15th that Robbie Parker gave this press conference, within a day, you had people saying, oh, it's a hoax. And then by January, within 6 weeks, you had another person, presenting 14 reasons why it was a hoax. This was in 6 weeks. And this was before any official records were produced, and of course the day that it happened, the media swarmed into they went to the scene, they talked with a lot of people, and they would talk to anybody who could give them any information, even people who didn't know or were inaccurate. So there was a lot of misreporting. And of course the hoaxers, took all of this misreporting and said, oh look, this indicates this or this indicates that. And then you had Dr. Carver, who was the medic of the state medical examiner, who was in a press conference, and people kind of tore that apart and said, oh my goodness, he's lying about this, he's lying about that. And I'm thinking, gosh, and so then you had these videos being created and conferences being convened saying, well, this was a hoax. And I just disagreed because it was not the way that I conduct research or the way that anybody should conduct reliable research. It is just, and you have to wonder, okay, what's behind this? Who benefits by saying that this is a hoax?
Yeah.
And so I started looking at other things, because to me, all of these circumstantial evidence and all of these claims and the 14 points all seemed to be distractions. They were all distractions. And the 14 points were, gosh, Adam Lanza never existed. The kids never existed. The parents were actors. Robbie Parker couldn't have done it. Or not Adam Lanza couldn't have done it because he was too thin to use a gun. And the school was abandoned. I mean, there were all sorts of ridiculous claims that people with a little bit of research could ascertain was totally untrue. And the one about the school being abandoned.
Yeah, that is what I heard here also, yeah.
Well, there's all kinds of local newspaper reports about things taking place at the school, where the choir is singing. I mean, there's at least 100 reports in the local newspaper about things that were occurring at the school during that time that it was supposed to be abandoned. And in fact, one of the videos or one of the excerpts from this film that this woman had made actually was a bus ride, an introductory, an excursion of the of the school bus that was in August of 2009 that the Newtown B used as a introduction to back to school, their back to school report. And if the school was closed, then they're certainly not going to show the bus driver going to Sandy Hook, where you can see all of the marigolds and where you can see in the background that teachers are carrying boxes into the school in August of 2009, when in fact the school was supposed to have been abandoned in 2008. So you have a lot of discrepancies even within the hoaxer movement itself, where you have one person saying, oh, it was abandoned. You have another person using, you know, indicating, no, it wasn't abandoned, but it was, the kids shouldn't have been attending the school because it was full of asbestos. And when you look at the, school, okay, the school was built in 1954. Every building that was built in 1954 is full of asbestos. Asbestos only becomes dangerous if it is released in the air. It is not dangerous unless it is released within, into the air.
Yeah, if you saw into it or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So the asbestos
story got through to here.
Yes. Well, so then I thought, okay, I was going to do a critique of her video, and I did three parts, and I thought, this is senseless. All I'm doing is addressing distractions. I didn't want to address distractions because that seemed like I was fulfilling an objective, is to spend all my time by addressing distractions, when in fact, what were the distractions distracting us from? What was the real picture? What was the real objective? Was it damage control? And if it was damage control, who were they concealing? What were they concealing? What bigger story? Who was benefiting from this damage control operation? That is what I viewed the operation about. It just seemed like a damage control operation to me.
Yeah, but they went very far in creating the idea that Sandy Hook simply hadn't happened the way it did, because I found a FBI report, at least there is a report on being an FBI report where it says no deaths at Sandy Hook. It was an exercise, misreported, created crises. And that is from a website, Political Ears.
Okay.
And they go very far in saying that it was an exercise that local media misreported on, and then government officials perpetuated the hoax in hopes of bringing about gun control legislation.
And that was the first thing. And I'll get to that FBI report. But one of the big psyops was, one of the 14 points was that it was an attempt by the federal government to seize guns. Now the media and the government have always been anti-gun, but you will find that whenever one of these events occur, that it actually compels people to go out and purchase guns. And so it does not mean that that the government is going to go out and seize guns. It actually increases gun ownership.
And it is not about guns really, because it is all these school shootings are about psychopharmaca.
That's what I saw. That's what I felt. Yeah. And getting to the FBI report, which is what I covered this in my book, anybody that works within law enforcement, and this was first reported on, I believe, the InfoWars. InfoWars is the first entity that reported this, and one of the writers for InfoWars wrote the story, And within 24 hours, then you had another person who has made all kinds of claims, was on InfoWars and said, oh yes, that's true. The FBI said that there were no deaths. And, well, anybody that's ever worked in law enforcement should know that the jurisdiction that handles, the investigation is the one that reports to the FBI. And in this case, the town of Newtown did not control the investigation. Rather, it was the Connecticut State Police who did the investigation. And they took over immediately. So the town of Newtown was not the reporting entity. It was the Connecticut State Police. And so in table 8 at the FBI, it showed no death because that was a report from the Newtown Police. But it was in table 11 that the Connecticut State Police actually reported the deaths in Newtown. The Connecticut State Police also create a yearly document that talks about all these deaths that I've also referenced in my book, mm-hmm. That covers the Sandy Hook situation, devoting several pages to it. So it's a situation, where they have misrepresented a document, misrepresented, something that's official, which gets back to the idea of official records, that when a researcher, a real researcher, uses official records, then anybody that is looking at the person's research, they can go to the record and find the exact same thing. And that is untrue in a compiled source where somebody's just very creative and they create something, there's no sources or anything, but with an original record, an original source, like a birth certificate. Okay, you state that the birth certificate was the event or was the record of a birth. And so you say, okay, the source for this information was the birth certificate, so that the person can go to the original record and get the same exact information. But if you misrepresent the original source and take it out of context, then they're, you know, it's going to confuse people.
Exactly.
And it's very deceptive. It's very, very, very deceptive.
Absolutely. And that is what I want to stress, is that your book has a ton of references in this sense.
I get carried away with footnotes. I really do.
Yeah. Well, it's great to do that. Yeah, I did the same thing when I wrote my book on the HPV vaccines, the cervical cancer hoax.
Of course.
So they couldn't attack my book, so they attacked me as a person.
Of course, and I have found that to be what they're doing to me as we speak.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because,
yeah.
Okay, my book stands on its own, and people can go to the source and they can say, okay, that's the source. The other thing too that people were saying, and I saw videos, I'm sorry I'm monopolizing the conversation here.
No, that's okay. You researched it. It was my question to tell me all about it.
But people were saying, there was a guy that made a video and he said, well, I looked online. I could find no death certificates for these children. I could find no birth certificates for these children. Therefore, they did not exist. Well, having been in family history research for a number of years, more years than I care to admit to, there are certain policies and stipulations for obtaining a death certificate or a birth certificate. And I have on my website, I went to each and every state and I made a link for every state. And if people will visit that page on my website and then click on whatever state they are interested in, they will find that yes, there you can receive a birth certificate. If you are the parent of the person, if you are the person, and you have to prove that you are the person, I recently obtained the the birth certificate for one of my daughters, because she had moved to a different state and she needed to have a certified copy of her birth certificate to obtain a driver's license in that state. So I had to supply a scan of my own driver's license to prove who I was. I had to answer these questions about who did we buy our house from. I mean, there were all kinds of questions that I had to answer to prove that I had a legitimate right to obtain a birth certificate. And a death certificate is the same way. Now, the death certificates for people in Connecticut, you can only obtain a birth certificate or a death certificate if it is 75 years or older. Okay? Mm-hmm. Anything else is protected by privacy laws, and that is true for most states. Mm-hmm. And so to say that these children never existed simply because this fool did not have I shouldn't call people fools, but this person, for him to claim that these people didn't exist because he couldn't find their certificates online is ridiculous. But there are enough people out there that say, oh my gosh, oh yes, and that's true, because they don't know the law and they don't recognize that there are privacy laws. Okay.
Yeah.
That dominate these kinds of situations.
Yeah, I understand. And it's the way, to know where to look and how to look, to be able to find it. Yes, I have the page now that you show on your website. Let me see whether I can put it in the chat. Here it is.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good.
There it is. Can you see it?
No, let's see what. Oh yes! Oh.
There it is. Oh,
isn't that wonderful? And if you click on those things, I mean, first I give a little identification and see, you know, so that you are a little description of what you're going to be looking for. But honestly, there are some very, it tells you what you can do, who you have to be, what the cost is, and not everyone can obtain a death or birth certificate unless you have a right to it, a parent, yeah. Or if it's your birth certificate, you can get your own birth certificate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you certainly can't go around collecting anybody's birth certificate or death certificate that you want.
No, we cannot, but the government can.
yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah, they're all over the place. They can do everything that we cannot. But anyway, that's a different subject. But yes, you have to know where to look and how to look, and what the rules are. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so anyway, instead of continuing to address all of these distractions, which was very time consuming and not productive. It's not productive.
No.
You counter distractions. So I started to look at the actual possibilities, potentialities, who would benefit, who's benefiting, what they were trying to conceal. And not that the people who were making these claims were the provocateurs, perhaps they were useful idiots or whatever. But you also have people that are addicted to fiction. They think, oh gosh, everything is a conspiracy, because they don't understand that, you know, bad things do happen. It doesn't mean that the government did it. Bad things happen all the time. It doesn't mean that the government is behind every bad thing that happens. They're behind a lot of bad things that happen, but not every bad thing.
No, but you have to really use your own logical judgment to see what is what. Yeah.
Absolutely, of course. So yeah. Then I just went a different direction and discontinued my critique because it wasn't satisfying. It was just seemed not a good thing to be doing.
So you went into the life of Adam Lanza, who he was as a boy at primary school, and that he had problems, and that he was put on medication and that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I found the list that he was on, Celexa, Neurontin, Buspar, and Remeron, and those are serious psychopharmaca.
Yes, and when you start looking at that, but I started earlier because he had problems early on. He did not speak until he was about 3, and so then of course you look at vaccines because we know that vaccines are the very, very first assault on any human being. And particularly, okay, you look at the year he was born, you look at at what was going on in those years, what kind of vaccines were recommended by the CDC, and then you just have to build some sort of a foundation for why a child would be put on psycho drugs to begin with. On psych drugs, okay? And vaccine damaged children are a big target for psych drugs. You look at the ADHD drugs and you think, if a child is vaccine damaged, they may be hyperactive, they may have some other symptoms. If they are mercury damaged and you have to look at the thimerosal issues and the vaccines that thimerosal was in and when they took thimerosal out. And you just have to piece together a picture.
They put aluminum in, which is just as bad.
Exactly. They took thimerosal out, but then they added aluminum. So,
more aluminum, yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And it's dangerous. Aluminum will ruin the blood-brain barrier, for instance.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah.
Brain damage is a given after that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And he seemed to exhibit, some very early signs, the head banging, not speaking, the social issues, the physical issues. And so I started at the beginning to see, okay, how is it conceivable? What happened with Adam Lanza? What may have happened to Adam Lanza, certainly it is circumstantial, but then when you follow through and you look at different patterns and you look at Big Pharma in general, and then you look at him specifically, and then you recognize that, okay, Big Pharma in collaboration with politicians want to make as much profit as possible. It is a $50 billion industry a year. Yep. Psych drugs, big, big, big money.
And you create sheeple.
Yes.
Not unimportant also.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, people on drugs, whether it's pharmaceutical drugs or whether it's illegal drugs, the government, any government, is going to be able to control people who are under the influence of drugs, much easier. They are going to be they're not going to be able to realize what is going on in their environment. They are not going to be cognizant of the loss of their liberties. And that is in addition to the massive profits that the drug industry is making, because they want everybody on drugs.
Yeah. Everybody on Soma, like Aldous Huxley said. Yeah.
Yes. And
we are close there.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's,
this happened to Adam Lanza also. Yeah.
Yes. And, so I go through, what happened to him, what was going on in his life, the fact that at age 10, he was already looking at homicide. He created the big book of Granny in the fifth grade when he was 10. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is an indication, that this is not typical. This is not typical. His behavior was anti-typical. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was atypical. And, and when you look at the standard of care, and when you look at how the psych drugs were developed, who created, psychiatry to begin with? And, and certainly it's a non-scientific,
scientism, so to speak. Yes.
Yes, it's not based on science. It's not based on blood tests. It's not based on
anything. No test whatsoever to prove what is
right
or wrong. Yeah, exactly.
So you can use all of these medications, and it's all based on the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders. And yeah. In my book, I talk about how they created these disorders, and that literally anybody who is taking some kind of a survey, you can go online and take a survey to see if you have a mental disorder.
Oh, you have?
Sure. And the pharmaceutical industry is the one that creates these surveys. You are going to be diagnosed with something, you know, something's wrong with you.
Yeah, well, they put anything, any human behavior, they put it in DSM-5.
Exactly.
The worst in the fourth edition. So yeah, it's always bingo.
Yes, you're going to have something wrong with you that they're going to have a pill for.
Yeah.
And it's just like the vaccine industry where they've got 300 new vaccines in the pipeline.
Yeah, it's horrible.
They want to vaccinate you for everything. They want to have a pill for everything.
Yeah.
It's very sad. Okay, so you have some questions for me.
Well, I see you speak here about, I don't know how you say it, akathisia?
Yes.
Yeah, and akathisia. I see the name of Peter Breggin there. Yeah, so that is important information for people to know in general, but especially in this case as well.
Okay, it is something that is, it's a very interesting thing. And I have a chapter, it's called Akathisia, Scraping on the Neurological Chalkboard. Mm-hmm. Now, people who experience this, and it typically happens after they are coming off of a drug, but they have people who experience this have what it's called, they cannot stay still. They have to keep their legs moving. They have to keep going. They have to, they can't sit still.
Deal with a pen like this.
they just cannot sit still.
Yeah.
And it is this inability to sit still accompanied by overwhelming anxiety, severe dysphoria, which is a psychological distress manifesting as an almost indescribable sense of terror and doom. It is characterized by a feeling of inner restlessness and a compelling need to be in constant motion. And severe akathisia is defined as this inability to remain still due to a sense of inner restlessness. And people who are affected by this, they fidget, they can't sit still, they rock from foot to foot while standing or sitting. Now, it is it's drug induced. It is always drug induced. Okay?
Yeah.
And
all these drugs will deplete your system from essential nutrients, and that is probably why these circumstances come into being.
Exactly. And so I was looking at the life of Adam Lanza, and he used to participate in something called Dance Dance Revolution, which is a game. It's a game where you stand on a platform and you dance according to, I've never seen it. I've seen the video of it. In fact, he used to go to the local theater, and he would start on Friday night. He would be there for every day during the weekend from 6 to 10 hours a day playing this game. I mean, this is a long time to be playing a game. He also had the home version of this game, Dance Dance Revolution. And the people at the theater used to call him the DDR guy. And I believe that this was his way of addressing what may have been akathisia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah.
It just made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just posed it as a possibility for why he was doing this. And in fact, one of the researchers had called the theater and I talked to the manager, and the manager said, "Oh, I can't address that. You'll have to talk to the corporate office." And then when you look at who owns the theater and who has interest in the corporate office and the corporate background, you see that there are some politicians who have some interest, you know, in this theater. And of course, they're not going to let any information out about, well, yes, Adam Lanza was here and he did do that. So it's kind of a big cover up because it's a big cover up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you speak about the Dance Dance Revolution in your book also, I see.
It. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he put he found a form to express his akathisia.
Yes.
And yes. He could hide it in a way.
Like, yes, yes. Yeah.
And then the other thing that you talk about in your book is that he was introduced to the use of guns by his mother because she had a childhood on a farm, and
yes, she went hunting, probably skeet shooting, with her brothers. She had brothers, mm-hmm. and she grew up on a farm. I mean, they learn how to kill chickens. They do, you know, do all that kind of stuff on farms. And I grew up in the same kind of environment. My aunt and uncle had guns. My dad had guns. Everybody had guns and it was just something that was a natural thing. Yeah. And it was natural for her. And, so she took both of her sons, out to the range. He was 4 when he handled his first gun. And I talk about what kind it was. So he was used to guns. And not only that, as he became a teenager, there are all sorts of video games that include guns. And in fact, the Pentagon, in conjunction with the the education industry or the people that produce these gun, videos, video games.
Games. Yeah.
Yeah. They worked with the Pentagon. To produce these games so that when people joined the military, they would be very, very good at shooting. They would be very good at shooting.
I remember a military person saying something like, yeah, when they come into the army, these guys are great, but they have no off button.
No, yes, they just shoot. Immediately. I mean, they're just, they're fast. They know how to shoot. They know how to, they know how to put their fingers right in the right place, mm-hmm. so that they can produce a lot of bullets in a very, very short period of time. Yeah. And he played video games all day long.
Yeah. So that is, then you have the principle garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
If you are in a stressful situation, you grab the first thing in your mind that you know well, And then if you have played these many aggressive games, then it's no wonder what you're doing.
Exactly. And the classification of SSRIs, mm-hmm. Which is Prozac and some of the drugs that he may have been on. Mm-hmm. He did try the Celexa as a result of going to Yale and having an evaluation there. But I believe that he was on these drugs, or may have just come off of these drugs, a few months before the shootings. And when you consider, the response of the Assistant Attorney General, when he was called into a meeting, with an organization, Able Child, which was co-founded by just a wonderful, wonderful person, Sheila Matthews. She is just a terrific person, and I've had her on my program. And she was in this meeting with Patrick Quancy, who is only one of 200 of the attorney generals for the state of Connecticut. And 20 of those assistant attorney generals work specifically for the Health and Human Services Administration within Connecticut, which is another story altogether. I mean,
yeah, I smell red here.
Yes. Okay. So basically those people are set up to work with the pharmaceutical industry. So anyway, they got together in a meeting, and Patrick Quancy, said, that they could not divulge exactly what Adam Lanza, what drugs he was taking, because they did not want other people to stop taking their drugs as a result. Okay. So obviously they are concealing the fact that Adam Lanza was recently on some sort of drug that may have caused homicidal and suicidal ideation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now Dr. Carver said, and at the press conference, he said that something to the effect that, "I hope this does not crash on the heads of the people of Newtown." Okay. Now, coroners usually sign off, they support what the doctor's declaration of death is. Mm-hmm. Coroners are also notoriously corrupt. Coroners also are not independent. Their conclusions are not independent conclusions. They work for a government entity. Yes. Dr. Carver was the state medical examiner. He might still be. I haven't followed up on this. He works for the state of Connecticut. And so you can say, for instance, if he found an SSRI in Adam Lanza's system at the time of the autopsy, he performed the autopsy on Adam Lanza, and he only provided the first page of that report, the autopsy. And if Adam Lanza's system only rendered the therapeutic dose, then it was up to the Dr. Carver to say, okay, the dose was therapeutic, therefore it was not an overdose, so it was okay. So he didn't have to report it. It was his decision whether to report whether Adam Lanza was in fact under the influence of a psychiatric drug.
Oh gosh. Well,
if it was therapeutic dose, then he was not under the obligation to say that he was on a drug.
Oh gee. So how to bend the truth, in other words.
Yes.
Yes. Oh well, Diana, it's so interesting, but the hour is almost
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yes, and so you have to come back and then elaborate on what you have found, because I want to hear the rest of the story as well.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. My next guest is not there yet. So I don't know what to do. First of all, of course, I want to thank you very, very, very much of telling about your book and telling the research you have done, the extensive research you have done on finding the truth and finding out what really happened. I cannot stress enough that your way of researching is impeccable. And I love reading your book because it is written in a very pleasant style, and again, with so many source material references that it is easy to check if you doubt something.
People exactly.
People can do their own thing with it.
Sure. Yes. And I cover the FDA and how they protect the corporations and.
Yes. And the whole story about how SSRIs and that sort of psychopharmaca are influencing people's behavior. That is beautifully researched by Anne Blake Tracy, and I'm trying to get her on my show as well, because people have to know about this, and especially as you said, when you come off these drugs, then that is the moment that it is most dangerous. Then it's not the side effects, it's the adverse effects. The serious adverse effects of these drugs are coming to play.
And they're not going to affect everybody in the very same way. Not everybody that's on these drugs is going to go to the local school and shoot everybody. But they may engage in road rage. They may engage in wife beating, domestic abuse, all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm trying to do two things at the same time.
I know.
Trying to see whether my guest is there already. I need to write her an email. But yes. You had to go. You told me you had only 1 hour, so I don't want to.
Well, that's okay. I can stay on until you're ready for your next guest, if you wish.
Well, let's see. I'll try to send an email to Doreen, and let me see what you can talk about in the meantime about what happened there. We had the toxicology report I read here.
Well, when you consider the number of people on these drugs, I mean, it is amazing. Let me just give you some figures about how many people are on psych drugs just in America alone.
Oh, wow, that will be awful.
Okay. Just as of April 2014, the number of people taking psychiatric drugs in the United States is as follows. ADHD drugs, there are 10 million. 291,860. Antidepressants, there are 41,226,394. On antipsychotics, there are 6,845,303. On anti-anxiety drugs, there are 36,472,663, for a grand total of 78,694,222. That is just in the United States alone.
Oh gosh, this is wagon loads full of crap into people.
Amazing. Yes.
Okay, Diana.
Thank you very much.
I will let you go because I see my dear friend Lauren already there.
Yes, I see her too.
Yeah, I want to thank you again, Diana, and let's reschedule so you can finish the story.
Okay, thank you.
That's not a story. Finish your research.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.